360's The Week That Was, the most listened to hour in Territory Radio. The Territory leaders break down this week's big issues.
And it is Friday morning. It is time for The Week That Was, proudly brought to you by De Silva Hebron, your local lawyers. And now also broadcasting from midday in Alice Springs on 8HA. And joining us in the studio this morning, we've got the Deputy Opposition Leader, Jared Mailey. Good morning.
Good morning, Katie. Good morning, listeners.
From Sky News, we have got Matt Cunningham. Good morning.
G'day, Wolfie.
We've also got the Health Minister and Minister for Tourism, Natasha Files. Good morning.
Good morning.
Great to have you all in the studio with us today. And I tell you what, there is certainly a lot to cover off on. And we might start with the current affairs report, which has made headlines around the nation earlier in the week. We made the headlines, I think you'd have to say, for all the wrong reasons. Alice Springs and the serious issues that they're facing when it comes to crime featured on the show. The vision has now been viewed more than 2 million times, and that vision was pretty heartbreaking to see. I think heartbreaking if you're like me or like many of us who've spent quite a bit of time in Alice Springs over the years. But I tell you what, you know, if we feel sad watching it, imagine how you're feeling right now living in Alice Springs, if you're trying to raise a family there, if you're trying to run a business and you're dealing with these issues. Obviously, what we saw, that brawl that we saw, was very bad in itself. But the fact that, you know, the following morning after that went to air, there was then reports from the watch commander that two blokes had been set upon by a group of between 10 and 15 kids that following morning. And that's not even sort of taking into account the issues that we have where there's windows broken, there's senseless crime, there's kids roaming the streets. I think for all of us in this studio and for everybody around the Northern Territory, this was not a surprise, really, seeing this vision, because it's something that we've been talking about and grappling with for some time.
Yeah, Katie, a couple of weeks ago, the CLP had a wing meeting in Alice Springs, and we all walked up and down the mall, and Leah went out at night time with Josh, and a few of us went out for dinner and just to get a feel of what it's like in Alice Springs. And I was shocked. There was these people roaming the streets, there was boards, and you walk down the mall and the shops were, like, boarded up. Not just boarded up, they had, like, security screens, there was broken windows. So I was really shocked to see how much... protection, I suppose you could call it. It was down after some of those shop owners, and we called into various shops, talked about, you know, their experiences, and they all had the same thing. They said they have to be so secure, people coming in, stealing all the time, breaking, and just senseless damage, just for no reason come in and break windows and all those sorts of stuff. So it was a real shock to the system to go down there, walk the streets, talk to people, talk to locals, talk to shop owners, and just see for your own self, in your own eyes, what the damage is and how they must live. And the poor victims in Alice Springs must feel terrible, because this happens day in, day out. So I really feel for them.
I was in Alice Springs the same weekend, and I think I went out the night before you guys did, Jared, and I was shocked, I've got to say, Wolfie. And the thing that shocked me most, and I think we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago, but the thing that shocked me most, I reckon there was close to 100 kids, some as young as 8 years old, maybe even younger, at midnight, 1 a.m, walking around those streets, and the only people offering any adult supervision were 4 police officers who had their work cut out. I mean, it just was a shocking, eye-opening situation. And, you know, these kids, the kids I saw, weren't doing anything wrong.
Yep.
You know, they were just kids out on the street. You know, they were doing bloody flips for the camera, you know. But, you know, it's not long from where the 8-year-old kid's out there alone on the street at midnight, 1 a.m, to when the kid's 14, 15 and it starts doing the wrong thing.
Yep.
And I think that's why we need to make sure the intervention's there, to make sure that the kid who's out on the street when they're 7 or 8 years old is looked after and looked after properly. And if their parents aren't doing the job, well, then someone else has got to do it, because otherwise we're going to see some of those issues that we're seeing play out now in Alice Springs.
Yeah, Katie, those images were heartbreaking, you know, for a small community to be portrayed in that way. And Alice Springs, as we all know in this room, is, you know, all of us have spent time there. It's so much more than that. We need to have, you know, the police resources, and I won't go over those figures. You know, I've spoken to you about them earlier in the week, Katie, the number of resources we're putting in there, but it can't be police alone. We need to have have community-led, solution-focused responses. I know, speaking to Minister Chancey Paik, who lives in Alice Springs, he's got a remote electorate, he's certainly working very hard on that. The youth outreach services, to come to the point that, Matt makes, you know, it's not acceptable for an eight-year-old to be on the street at night. They should be at home. And if home's not a safe place, you know, we have the responsibility to work through that. So these are complex issues to address.
It seems like we're so scared at the moment as a community, right? If a child's on the street and they're 8 years old and you know, there isn't a safe place for them to go, it seems like we're so scared to find them somewhere safe to go. You know, we're so worried about sort of the, you know, the implications of it being a race thing, when at the end of the day, we have got kids that are on the street at the moment. And if they're not being looked after, we've got to find some kind of solution here. We've got to find some way of actually trying to break this cycle.
Well, I know, you know, the sort of fear of what is described as a second stolen generation comes into it, and in some ways that's understandable, but it's also counterproductive, I think. And we're not intervening often enough when we need to. There was, you know, I noticed Mick Goodaway into this situation this week. You know, I would suggest that, with the greatest of respect, he's been more of a part of the problem than a part of the solution. If you look at you know, I sat through almost every day of that Royal Commission, and the Royal Commission was a Royal Commission into child protection and detention, and it spent its whole time on the detention side of things and nowhere near enough time on the protection side of things. And when it did, there were some parts of that Royal Commission I thought that were really worrying. The most worrying part was when Hilary Hannam, who was the Chief Magistrate here in the Northern Territory, was trying to tell the Commission that authorities weren't intervening often enough. She was saying that, what the truth is that there are so many cases where we should be intervening and we're not. And Mick Gooda just, he didn't want to hear what she was saying. He basically just tried to shut her down and saying, well, that's not what I'm told. I'm told we're taking these kids away when we shouldn't. Well, I think that if you wander the streets at Alice Springs at midnight, you would see that we're not intervening often enough when we need to. Now, that doesn't mean that kids have to be taken off their parents.
Absolutely not.
Or taken off their families. You know, the first thing that should happen is that we should try and find a responsible family member for them. But I tell you, the other thing that's happening is the grandparents are exhausted and they're beyond the point where they're able to even look after these kids. And in between, you've got a generation of parents who are just, you know, not looking after their children. And so then what do? We've got to find a way to make sure these kids, when they're 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, are put into a safe environment and looked after and given every chance to have a good upbringing rather than wandering around the streets at midnight.
It's, these children need looking after. There's no question about that. And before I was a politician, I did a bit of work in the care and protection as an independent children's lawyer. And I saw it for real life, how these children were taken away from their families and they needed that. There's no question about it, because their families were, they'd go home, there'd be no food in the fridge, there'd be alcohol, there'd be drugs, there'd be violence like you couldn't imagine. You know, kids aren't talking about a fight over a bag of lollies. They're talking some serious domestic violence in the home, and they've got nowhere to go. So it needs to happen now, and it needs to step in, because otherwise we're just going to go into another generation and we're just going to be badder and get worse and worse and worse. Because I disagree with what Mick Gooda said, that nothing's changed. I reckon it's got a lot worse in Alice Springs.
Well, let's take a very quick listen to some of Mick Gooda's comments, not all of them, but some of what he had to say on A Current Affair earlier in the week.
What I'm saying is that the community, both Indigenous and non-Indigenous in Alice Springs, have got to come together and start saying what they think is acceptable, and that's got to be supported by both governments. The governments pull all the levers on this. They have the control over the justice system. They have the control over police. They have the control over alcohol, you know. So I reckon if it was up to me, I'd be pulling the community together and saying this is what our expectations are in here in Alice Springs, and work with government to make it happen.
I guess the problem is, at this point in time, you know, we have got different levels of government. The federal government, I'm not too sure whether there's been much discussion with them at this point. Matt, I don't know whether you've spoken to the feds. I know you did probably last week or the week before with the other, you know, with the reporting that you've done.
Well, here's my one point I think that gets missed in all of this. Yep. And you know, what's going on in Alice Springs is a crisis, and that will come as no news to the people who live in Alice Springs, and it'll be no great shock to anyone who lives in the Northern Territory. But now it's a national issue. It's been, you know, it's, as you say, seen more than 2 million times from the Current Affair program. But I don't think we keep looking north to Darwin and saying it's your fault and you need to fix it. But I don't think it is. I think we should be spending more time looking east to Canberra, because there are two significant things that the federal government have done that have contributed to the situation in Alice Springs more than anything else. The first is that Royal Commission that Malcolm Turnbull called on a whim after watching a TV program, didn't ask any questions, and then the Royal Commission itself, I think, set out to find what it wanted to find, and that's exactly what it did. And then it delivers a set of more than 200 recommendations to the government and puts it in an impossible situation. So if the government went and followed every one of the recommendations from the Royal Commission, the situation in Alice Springs would be even worse than it is right now. And, you know, they try and walk the sort of line between keeping, you know, the general community happy and keeping the advocates on the Royal Commission side happy, and then they end up in this impossible situation. So that's sort of what's caused the embers of the fire that was there. And then come March last year, the federal government, despite warnings from people like Scott McConnell, who said, do not do this, someone who knows these people better than anyone, says, do not do this. They just chuck a big bucket of petrol on that fire by putting all this COVID cash into the community. So suddenly you get all of these stimulus payments, early access to superannuation. And, you know, Jared was showing us some stats before. But
the latest
since
crime
then,
stats, I think
the
they
stats
are
going through the roof. Domestic violence through the roof. Alcohol-fueled violence through the roof. All of these things. And, you know, what you're seeing play out on the streets of Alice Springs, you know, I think the federal government's got a lot to answer for. I think the Prime Minister, who hasn't been to the Northern Territory for a long time, I think it would pay him to get on a plane and fly to Alice Springs and see for himself what's going on.
Well,
there.
Maybe him and Michael Gunner should go for a walk around Alice Springs together.
Well, they should do that. But one thing I would say is they should not announce to anyone that they're doing it. They should not take a camera with them. They should not tell anyone that they're coming. They should just turn up at midnight on a Friday night and see for themselves what's going on.
Yeah, I actually think that that would be a beneficial thing. I think it would be beneficial at this point in time, you know, for all of the government ministers. I know that not everybody federally is going to go to Alice, but I think for all of our government ministers here in the territory. Look, what I was quite taken by earlier in the week, I caught up with the police minister, Nicole Manison, and I had asked her whether she would go down and have a community meeting. You know, look, some of us may be in disagreement about what Mick Good has said on A Current Affair earlier in the week, but one thing that I do think has some merit in this space now is that we seem to have a genuine want, I think, by everybody, including the government, to try and sort this situation out. But what concerns me is we have a government right now in the territory who's not actually prepared to sit down with the community. You know, the police minister said to me earlier in the week, well, no, I'm not going to go to a community meeting. I don't feel it's productive. Maybe the government doesn't feel that it's productive, but I tell you what, for the people of Alice Springs, they want to be heard.
Katie, I understand what you're saying, and I respect what Matty's saying about it's a federal thing, but really the buck stopped with the Gunner government. They've changed the laws and made it bail easier and changed the presumption. I know that this Country Liberal Party are going to introduce some legislation next week to change that presumption for repeat offenders. So really, the buck stopped with the NT government, and they need to make sure that these repeat offenders, because it's about the victim. We need to start focusing on the victim and how they feel. Like that 13-year-old girl that was assaulted in her own home. It turns out that she's a rural girl, and I know her. She still hasn't been to school yet. So physically she's okay, but mentally she's just really distraught. Like
the little girl that was punched in the face this week.
Punched in the face. And I was speaking to the family. They've put a lock on her bedroom. The dog sleeps inside now. So just that, how the victim feels about that. So it's time to fix it and start with strengthening the bail laws. We need to make them stronger.
And look, I think we've all spoken about this in the studio before. I think that it's not only a matter here of us talking about, you know, we hear the government talk very often about the generational change, and there is no doubt that we need to see that generational change. It's not acceptable that we've got kids that aren't going to school. It's not acceptable that we've got kids who are roaming the street at night. And we've got to work out what the causation of that is. And I know that this is something that we've been grappling with for a long time, but we've got to give every kid in the Northern Territory the best possible start to life and the best opportunities that they can possibly garner. You know, there's no doubt about that. They shouldn't be on the streets. But then we also have a real issue at the moment with, you know, with some kids that are a bit older, whether they're 14, 15, I don't know their ages, but I've certainly seen some of the, you know, the notifications that are coming out even from, you know, from the police, etc., about these break and entries and about some of the serious concerns that we've got, not just in Alice Springs, but all around the Northern Territory. Now, I'm not saying that we put every kid into jail. That's certainly not what I'm saying here. But right now, if we don't start to try try to sort of swing the pendulum so that we're actually thinking a little bit more about the victims of crime and trying to make sure that, that people are feeling safe in their homes. I, you know, I've said it before, but I don't. I think we're going to end up in a situation where people feel really uncomfortable living here if they don't feel safe. You know, like your safety is one of the biggest concerns. And I said this earlier in the week on the show. I'm not someone who's been broken into, touch wood. So for me, I am only going on what our listeners are calling through and saying to me each and every day. And it would be negligent of me to ignore them and to pretend that it's not an issue. And I think that it's the same with the government. If you don't listen to what people are saying,
So, Katie, we've got a massive debt, and the only way out of the debt is to grow the population and grow the economy. And I agree completely with what you're saying. We're talking about these 400 people coming up to work at Howard Springs. They're going to come and live here and live in the church. If they don't feel safe, they're going to leave. But what we really want them to make them feel safe, so they tell their friends, come up, the church is a great place. We've got a great lifestyle. We've got fishing. We've got a beautiful harbour and all those things which are really good. We've got open space. We don't have the big crowds. COVID hasn't hit us, thank God, and touch wood about that. So we want these people to go and tell their friends that the territory is a good experience and have had fun. Come and live here. We've got everything we need. We've got free water park. You can't find that
and
down
we
south.
We do. You know, like in so many ways, it is such a fantastic place, and all of us agree with that. There, you know, no doubt. But
if crime doesn't come under control, we're talking about Alice Springs now, but we're talking about Palmerston. We're talking about the rural area. Crime out there is going through the roof. I've lived there my whole life, and I've had my house. I'm not broken into, but people stole stuff out of my yard.
Yeah.
And that hasn't happened ever. So it's right across the territory because there are no consequences, but it's time to make sure the victims feel safe in their own homes. We want people to come here to grow the population and grow the economy and wherever it takes.
The economic issues and the social issues do go hand in hand, and we absolutely acknowledge that. And I think in this space, you know, particularly when you're talking about these young people, I know it's the opposition has a different view, but Kate Warden, as Minister for both Urban Housing and Territory Families, is working really hard along with Chancey Paik, and we need to look at remote communities. And I think it's not only housing in remote communities, but it's why people coming into town. And absolutely, you know, all of our urban areas in the Territory are service centres for remote communities, but, you know, ovals in remote communities, making those remote communities have facilities that people want to stay in and be involved in the community. So they're certainly complex issues and we're addressing them.
I think that's a really good point. And you know, to open a whole nother can of worms, but when you talk about these communities, you need to have a an economy that people participate in these communities. And that doesn't exist, right? And until that does, I don't think we're going to ever fix this problem. So, you know, long term, that's what we need to do. You want to make sure that, you know, when you go to one of these communities, when I go to these places, the only commerce that exists is the remote store, you know, and sometimes we're talking about communities of 2,000-3,000 people. You know, why don't they have a pizza shop and a bakery and, you know, everything else? And how do we get to the point where, you know, that is what a community looks like? Those communities should look like any other country town in Australia, but, you know, they don't. And that's what we need to fix to ever actually properly fix this problem.
I do just want to quickly go back to the situation in Alice and talk about tourism. Tourism-wise, Filesy, I mean, the fact that now we've had over 2 million people view this vision, I know that, you know, I'm sure that your tourism promoters would wish for that kind of, you know, that kind of viewership, I guess you'd say, on some of our more positive campaigns. It's a real shame that it's gotten to the point where, you know, where we've got so many people around Australia who've seen this vision. But at the end of the day, like we've all been saying throughout the morning, we've all been, you know, banging on about this for a long time.
So I've been in regular contact with Tourism Central Australia specifically, and certainly listening to the ideas that they have had. We know that COVID, you know, one sector, it's had a huge impact, of course, but one sector has been tourism and hospitality, and particularly in Central Australia, the international market is key there. So they have had devastation from COVID, but particularly hard hit. So I've been in constant contact with them over the last few weeks, working how we can work that through to provide support to them. And certainly this, you know, perception and these images messages going around Australia and potentially internationally is not what we want. You know, Central Australia is an amazing place. It's absolutely magical when you fly in there, and you know, the McDonald Ranges as the backdrop to the community of Alice Springs is magnificent. So it's not the image we want to be sending.
And, remember that the COVID, you know, the anti-government can't do anything about it. It's a worldwide thing, and the government has done a great job, and I really hold my hat off for them. They've done a great job. We've had no COVID in the Northern Territory, and it's been really good. But what they can control is crime, and we need to fix that, because if people are going to come to the Alice Springs on a holiday and then have become a victim or see crime, they're going to go away and tell their friends, don't bother going to the Territory. So that is one thing that the government can control is crime, and they need to do something about it, because it's just going to get worse and worse without any levers pulled in the right direction.
360's The Week That Was. Thanks to DeSilva Hebron, your local lawyers.
Joining us in the studio this morning for The Week That Was, of course, Jared Maley, Matt Cunningham and Natasha Files. Now, there has been a lot to take in this week, and I tell you what, aside from that current affair vision that rattled us all, we also know that the Northern Territory Police have charged a 21-year-old male in relation to a serious assault in Karama on Thursday evening last week. It is alleged that this man assaulted a 3-year-old boy after having approached the child in the front yard of his house. Now, a passerby who witnessed the incident came to the child's aid and notified the police. The man was arrested shortly after the incident, luckily, and by the sounds of it, the police acted incredibly quickly when it came to responding to that crime. As I say, there's quite a bit to take in here, because there has been a lot of discussion this week about whether the Northern Territory Police are really notifying the community about some of the more serious situations that are unfolding around the community. Now, I think that that is obviously one side of this discussion, but then on the other side, the thing that entirely concerns me as a parent is thinking about the fact that a 3-year-old cannot play in their front yard safely. I know that the police were at pains to say to me earlier in the week when I interviewed the commander that, that we don't have a wider issue in the Territory when it comes to that safety of children in their yards. As a parent, you know, I can rest assured of that. However, you know, the community of Karama have been calling for some time, or certainly been saying for some time, that they've got some real issues when it comes to antisocial behaviour and various different concerns. To me, it does not get any worse than the serious sexual assault of a 3-year-old child in the northern suburbs.
No, it's certainly terrible news, and I understand the police did a great job. So the frontline police are working hard, but really, I suppose when it comes to the police media unit, the buck stops with the police minister. The police minister needs to pull the right strings to make sure that the public know about this, for their own public safety, to make sure they know so they can keep the children locked away for a certain period of time, or what's going on. Because otherwise, if they don't, that's how rumours start, social media starts, and the next minute you've got something which is blown completely out of control. So it's really up to the police minister to go issue some directions to the police media unit to either give it to the media of the fifth floor to hand out, but that information needs to go to the public as soon as possible.
Look, it's not the only situation, obviously, that has unfolded throughout the week. We also know it was being reported by the NT Independent yesterday, fairly early yesterday, that there'd been another very serious incident in Alice Springs. There was a house break-in, and there has been a charge in relation to that house break-in in Alice Springs, because it's also alleged that this 15-year-old male unlawfully entered the property and then sexually assaulted a woman inside. Now, this incident happened last month, but we did not see a press release come out until yesterday. My understanding is that yesterday is when that person was charged. But, as we've been discussing, and I know that the Northern Territory News has certainly reported on this quite heavily throughout the week, and that is the concern within the community that there are serious incidents happening that the public are not being notified of. Now, look, I will say I've worked in that police media unit and they work bloody hard. Or I know I certainly did when I was back there. And sometimes the difficulty is it's not a matter of the crew that work in the police media unit saying, all right, we're not going to release this information. It's a matter of the police that you are working with, obviously, sort of pushing back and saying, no, this information isn't something that we need to release to the broader public. Now, I understand when we're talking about sexual assaults, that very often the biggest concern, and the commander said to us throughout the week, the biggest concern is ensuring that the victim isn't identified, or there's not that concern of that victim identification. But we seem to have a real issue here, especially if you're talking about the fact that, you know, the Chief Minister didn't know about the alleged serious assault, a sexual assault of a three-year-old child until Monday. You know, so this incident happens on a Thursday. You do not know about it until a Monday. That's just talking about that notification between, you know, the police and then the government. But then when you're talking more broadly about that, you know, notifying or letting the community know about what's going on within our own community, I would always argue, and I argued this to the police when I had them on earlier in the week, it's not a matter of public interest, it's a matter of public importance as far as I'm concerned.
I reckon there's a couple of things here, Katie. One is, it's a really sad fact, and we found this out after the rape of the two-year-old girl in Tennant Creek, where suddenly these things were in the spotlight, and then all of a sudden I found that I was being told on such a regular basis about these things happening. You know, on the wake of that incident, I reckon there were another four or five that I reported on over the space of a couple of weeks. And if you look at the stats, and I got the stats from the police last year, the 2019 stats, there were 106 sexual assaults of children aged under the age of 15 in the Northern Territory, and 26 of those were children under the age of 10. So that's one every fortnight. So I have some sympathy for the police when they, you know, we're having a go at them for not putting this information out. I think what the real tragedy here is that this happens almost so often that it's not news, right? And that I know that sounds really crude, because it should be. Absolutely, there should be nothing more important. But when I work, you know, when I worked in police rounds in Victoria, if there was a single fatality car crash, it wasn't really a story because it happens so often. It should be,
which
right?
is it's so an absolute bad, tragedy,
but
it's, so
but it's the same thing you're dealing with here. So on that level, I have some sympathy for the police and their media unit that they're not putting. Otherwise, they'd be putting out two of these a week. On the other hand, where I don't have sympathy for them, and it's more, this is a government issue more than just a police issue, they've backed themselves into a really difficult corner with their approach to the NT Independent, and I think that they need to immediately reverse their ban on the NT Independent. Because in the case of Karama, the Karama incident, right, so Christopher Walsh from the NT Independent got that information independently of police media, went to them, tried to get confirmation, right, and they wouldn't respond to him because they don't respond to him because they don't view him as a legitimate media outlet. Now, Labor were very happy for him to be a legitimate journalist when they were in opposition, right? So they should be happy for him to be a legitimate journalist now. The same with the Alice Springs case.
Yep.
You know, he's reported that, and it's not until after he's reported that the police then put the information out. The ban on the NT Independent is stupid, and it needs to end immediately, and the government is consistently ending up with egg on its face now. Now, because of that ban, they need to lift it and lift it today.
Yeah, I agree. I don't understand why you can't just turn up to a press conference if there's one on, you know, why we can't just have a situation where any journalist in the Northern Territory can operate. To me, you know, it's like
it's a farcical situation. Well, and even every government in this country sends out an email with a media alert when they're holding a press conference. This government sends selective text messages to selective journalists about when things are on. Now, I've been left out on several occasions of press conference conferences that have happened. Now, I'm sure that was by accident, not a deliberate ploy, but at the same time, the system that they now use doesn't work.
It's
broken. And they're going to such extraordinary lengths to stop one person from attending their press conferences. It's bad for democracy. It's bad, you know, it's in complete contradiction to their promise to be open and transparent. Well, and they need to fix
and
it.
And I've made this point on air before when we've actually spoken about this. It's up to Territorians where they get their news from, right? You know, like if they choose to get their news from Channel 9, then that's where you get your news. If you choose to get it from Sky News, that's where you get your news. If you tune in here every day, well, that's the best thing to do, but that's where you get your news.
The more sources of news we have, the better.
Absolutely.
You know, we don't want to get to a situation where there's just one source of truth.
Yeah. You know, that's exactly right. Nor should there be. You know, if you want to read the NT News every morning, that is something that, you know, look, that's something I do. But it's up to Territorians where they get their news. But you cannot start picking and choosing, you know, which media outlets you deal with. And then to go back to that point, you know, like at the end of the day, we, you know, the community does need to be notified when there's serious incidents happening.
And they need to be able to respond to genuine questions. In the Karama case, there was some initial misreporting. Yep. Now, it wasn't the journalist's fault, right? Because he's gone to the police and asked for them to confirm and come back with details. But the original story said that happened in Palmerston. Mm. So you've got 30,000 people in Palmerston going, oh, my God, right? Because the police wouldn't respond properly to his request. Now, that their decision to respond not to respond to the NT Independent on that issue is a directive from the government, right? And that should not happen in a free and open democracy.
360's The Week That Was. Thanks to De Silva Hebron, your local lawyers.
You are listening to Mix 104.9's 360. It is The Week That Was. Now, we did just need to take a quick break, but we were discussing the fact that there has been sort of allegations, I think you'd say, this week of police secrecy. And we were discussing the fact that, unfortunately, at the moment, it certainly seems in some cases that the government is sort of, I guess you would say, maybe picking and choosing who information in the media goes out to. I always think, you know, it's good if it is just a fair and straight bat, if everybody gets a go. Like we were saying, you know, different people, different Territorians will listen to or read or watch different publications to get their news from the sources which they feel they like the most. But I think at the end of the day, you've got to try and make it as fair as possible for everybody, particularly when you're a government who comes into power with a promise of being open and transparent.
I agree completely, Katie. This government came into power and saying open and transparent, and what they've done is they've taken away the scrutiny committee, this ban on the Independent. It's a ban, I'm not sure why, maybe it's something deeper. There might be some behind the scenes we don't know about, but it really is about Territorians. They deserve to be able to choose what they listen to, and also information needs to be accurate. And journalists need to do their job and go and double check. And if they can't go and check and ask for information, they can't do that. So the wrong reports may be put out there. So it's really about the Territorians.
It is difficult, Katie, in this day and age where with social media and media platforms and websites that technological advances make it, you know, anyone, you know, you guys have got qualifications in here.
Some of us do.
Not sure whether you're talking about you or me.
Jared's the only one with qualifications.
Sorry about that, you.
But we're talking, and, you know, particularly coming across to the COVID vaccine, like saying to people, make sure you get your information from a source of truth and that there's accountability and processes in there. So it certainly is a space that I think will be a conversation point
going forward. Isn't it? I find this such a funny discussion because you're right. You know, social media, it can be a cesspool for misinformation, but it's where the government at the moment does actually put out a lot of their information as well. There's been times over the last 6 months where the only place we can get sort of a COVID update at one point in time from the government was from the Chief Minister's Facebook page, which to me was quite astonishing.
Yep, that happened a few times.
Yeah.
And there was once recently where there was a hotspot was declared, and it was declared via Facebook, you know, which... I don't know.
I think what you've always got to keep in mind, and, you know, Filesy, it's not having a crack at you, or Jared, it's not having a crack at you, but what you've always got to keep in mind is that not everybody gets their news from Facebook. In fact, a large majority get it from those conventional sort of methods, i.e. the radio, the news, TV news, and the newspaper. And, you know, even if you're actually just making sure that there's a procedure or a protocol in place that it's going out to all of those locations at once, you know, it means that everybody's getting that information at the same time.
Hear, hear.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's important that the Territorians get the information and it's in timely and accurate.
360's The Week That Was. Thanks to De Silva Hebron, your local lawyers.
Well, there's plenty to cover off on this morning, but we've only got 10 minutes left. You are listening to The Week That Was, and in the studio with us, Natasha Files, Matt Cunningham and Jared Maley. Now, I do want to touch on the fact that we know the AstraZeneca vaccine is set to roll out. I believe are we stage two next week? What is it, Natasha?
So, yes, next Monday sees stage 1B rollout, Katie.
Okay.
So 1A is our frontline health workers at highest risk, those border quarantine officials. 1B is the remainder of our health workers, Territorians aged over 70, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders over 55, and other people with some underlying medical illnesses. So we will see the rollout from next week. So it doesn't mean you have to get vaccinated next week. We obviously have millions of people in Australia to provide the vaccine to, so they've come up with these categories to help with that.
Yep.
But there's still plenty of time within those categories to get the vaccinations out.
And there had been some, you know, there's been actually quite a bit of talk this week about some of those European countries or some of those European locations certainly sort of pushing back on the AstraZeneca vaccine. That's not going to be the case for us here in the Territory, as I understand, but there's still a lot of people who've got concerns about the clotting and some of those issues or those concerns which have been raised about blood clots.
Katie, it's really important that people understand that both Pfizer and AstraZeneca have been through rigorous testing in Australia. So we saw those vaccines roll out, I think, late last year, early this year overseas, and Australia still put them through their own rigorous testing processes, both those vaccines. And we've seen the World Health Organization and other leading public health agencies and experts who found no causal link between AstraZeneca and blood clots. So it's really important that people get information from a source of truth that's factually correct. Talk to your primary healthcare provider, whether it's your local clinic or your GP, about your personal circumstances. But these vaccines are safe and effective, and just because they've been developed rapidly doesn't mean they've bypassed
it. I was going to say, you know, if you are somebody who's got high blood pressure or a family history of blood clots or something like that, is it a situation where you do, when you go for that vaccine, where you've got to make sure that you make the person who's administering it, you've got to make them aware of that?
So, Katie, what I can say is millions have received the AstraZeneca vaccine and they've had no clots. And so what we have seen is these vaccines go through rigorous testing here in Australia.
Yep.
But, yes, it's like any health treatment. You need to talk to your GP about your personal circumstances and they'll provide you with the best advice. But I just need to reassure people. People have a feeling because the vaccine's been developed so quickly.
Yeah.
But that's because we've had leading medical and scientific minds working together, working across countries to roll this vaccine out because of the global pandemic.
I mean, I have got actually a listener question here, and it said, I usually get the flu jab this time of year due to my low white blood cell count. I went to the doctor and they said that I couldn't until later in the year because the health minister stopped them coming into the NT until the COVID jab has rolled out. Is that the case?
So, Katie, we see each year a new flu vaccine developed because the flu mutates and changes each year. And so generally it's around April that we see the new flu vaccination come in. No, people, we do need to make sure with the COVID and the flu vaccinations both rolling out through those dry season months for Territorians, essentially, that, you know, there is a time you're not allowed to receive. I think it's 2 weeks before or after your vaccine. So you can't sort of get the COVID vaccination one day and then get the flu the next day. But that's not correct in terms of the flu vaccine
so they're
not
still
being
gonna
allowed.
Roll out.
Absolutely.
Yep. Righto. Hey, one other thing I am keen for us to talk about this morning is the fact that the Labor Party, well, they've handpicked Marion Scrimgeour to run in the seat of Lingiari. Matt Cunningham, I'm pretty sure you covered this a few weeks ago, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right, Wolfie. I don't know about handpicked. It was actually there were four people who ran in, and I think it's the first time in a long time
Make sure you get your news from a factual source.
First time in a long party, the Labor Party hasn't handpicked a candidate because there was no intervention from the federal.
Yep.
What do they call it? You know, I don't know what that cult calls its little different bodies, but. But this was actually a rank and file ballot.
Oh,
so it was Marion Scrimgeour, Maddie Bonson, Jeannie Govan, and Rowan Foley were the four candidates, and they had 4 or 5 weeks to campaign, and then there was a vote among rank and file Territory Labor members, and Marion Scrimgeour won that quite comfortably.
Well done to Marion, and that's going to be it's going to be an interesting race, obviously, when we talk about the federal election. Jared, where are things at with you guys selecting yours?
Yeah, we're having our central council in late June, I'm pretty sure, and they're going to select it then, and then it really up to the Territorians to pick who they want to.
How come you didn't pick one at your last central council?
Well, I was down there, but I was out on the street talking to our businesses and local people about that. So it's a party thing, and they're
it's a matter
doing
for the party. That's what you meant to say.
It's a matter for the party. But what we can say is we're going to come up with some good candidates, and it's up to Territorians to pick who they want in their next election.
Fozzie can remember a line. She's good like that. She'll always.
I'll give you a quick call if I need it.
Marion's an excellent candidate. I think elected. She was the first Indigenous woman elected to our Legislative Assembly here in the Territory. She was Deputy Chief Minister, an exceptional leader in our community. So I'm really excited that Territorians will have the opportunity, hopefully, to support her and have her as our voice in Canberra.
One thing I'd say about Marianne, I mean, she quit the Labor Party once over a dispute over policy.
Yep.
She is someone who has never been afraid to speak her mind, and I hope she brings that same attitude to Canberra if she is fortunate enough to win that seat of Lingiari.
Oh, I always like it when people are, you know, like when they do speak their mind. It's something I thoroughly enjoy. Anyway, well, that is it for us this morning. What a morning it's been. It's always busy in here. Jared Maley, of course, the Deputy Opposition Leader, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, and thank you, listeners.
Matt Cunningham from Sky News, thank you for your time, mate. We'll see you again a bit later. You're helping out at the It's a Blokes Thing lunch today as well.
Looking forward to it, Wolfie. Yeah. With Sean Hampson,
he's going to be
former champion Tiger, who won again last night. Going to be four flags in 5 years for the Tigers.
I'm a Parramatta boy.
Yeah, he was talking about the Eels last night and their fantastic performance.
In the rain, in the cold.
Hey, good stuff. And, of course, Natasha Files, the Health Minister. We'll catch you again a bit later today too.
Wolfie, you've missed my most important title this week. Patron of the Nightcliff Tigers. The grand final tomorrow night.
Course.
So hopefully they were singing it last night in Nightcliff. Oh, we're from Tigerland. Hopefully they're singing it tomorrow night. But wishing all the teams, it's a big day in footy tomorrow.
Best. Who are you tipping? Nightcliff, obviously, for you, Filesy. What about you, Matt?
Yeah, Nightcliff.
Nightcliff, same. What about you, Jared?
Nightcliff.
What about in the ladies' comp? I'm going for Pints.
Ooh.
Pints, yeah.
They were. It was a good game last week, the Nightcliff women and Pints, but those Buffaloes did so well in that upset a couple of games ago, but those Pints women, they're undefeated all season,
Matt,
so it'll be a great game.
You? Yeah?
Yeah, I think Pints. Rick Nolan's coaching skills will get them over the line in the...
I'm going to go to the Buffet, the underdogs.
Oh, there you go.
Buffet,
it is going to be a fantastic weekend of footy, no doubt about it. Lovely to catch up with you all. We'll talk to you again very soon. You're listening to Mix 104.9's 360, and that was The Week That Was, brought to you by De Silva Hebron.